BCT Tech Chat for March the 10th, 2007.
Oh, works.
Hey, Don, how's it going?
Not badly at all, Rick. Nice to meet you. I jumped the gun a little bit. I know that the official start time is 2 o'clock, at least here on the West Coast it is. So I just thought I'd drop by and see who was going to be here, and I was kind of surprised that thus far it's only the two of us.
Yeah, it's a slow start. Same thing last night. I think more people will show up. At least I hope so.
Maybe I'm jumping the gun, but I'm curious to know. You know, I've been playing around with this Book Wizard producer. And in the documentation of that thing, they list their email list as being on Topica. And I subscribe to it, but it appears to be dead. Do you happen to know if by any chance they moved somewhere? Just on a hunch, I tried BW subscribe at Google Groups, you know, and got a response, no such group.
I'm not real sure. I'm not familiar with the Book Wizard group. Is that part of the Bookport stuff from APH?
Well, it is an APH beta. Essentially, the Bookport is a machine which is designed to produce DAISY books. I started to say encrypted. It isn't encryption. It's DAISY formatted books. And I wanted to play with it, and it's probably operator error on my part, but I'm running into a bit of a problem. And so I thought this afternoon, just in the outside chance that somebody's here that is on that list or plays with that thing, maybe they'll have some idea as to how to deal with it. But I wanted to subscribe to their list, and in the docs it talks about a Topica address to which I subscribed and got a subscription confirmation. But in the 3 days that I've been subscribed, there's been no traffic whatsoever. So I kind of think, you know, there was a general falling away from Topica a while back, and a lot of people landed on Google Groups. And I thought, therefore, I would try it, but got a no such list when I tried to subscribe to the same group on Google Groups. So if they're there, they're there under a different name.
I would definitely email Larry Skutcon and ask him if the list still exists. You might want to just send a message saying hello out to the list you're on and see if anybody answers. But, you know, that's a possibility. They could have moved, and the documentation just hasn't been updated yet. But I would definitely email Larry. Yeah, I'm sure he could definitely shed some light on that, since he's, you know, I think he works on the Book Wizard as well as the Bookport.
Yeah, I'll do that. And he's a nice guy. You know, I go back to the DOS days. I cut my teeth on DOS. In fact, I came kicking and screaming into the Windows environment in the early 90s, but that's another story. Yeah, he's a great guy and just really personable. I know he'll be willing to answer.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he will. You know his email address, don't you?
The one I got from the docs was lscutcheon@aph.org.
Yeah, that'll probably work. And you probably could also, although I don't know how often he looks at that, you could email him at, what is that? blindcooltech@gmail.com, I believe.
Okay, will do. By the way, I appreciate very much the tutorials you've got on Blind Geek Zone. I have been playing a little bit with FileZilla, and you got me up and running with that thing, and I'm really very grateful, so thanks very much.
Hey, that's great. Yeah, I like FileZilla. That's a nice program. It's real accessible and has very, very few issues with it.
I really haven't gotten into the finer points of it. I've just basically done some basic FTP downloading with it, but I think, if I remember correctly, the doc's saying that it had resume capabilities, you know, a crash recovery and or whatever the appropriate terminology is. So if you have a download that gets stopped for whatever reason, you can recover at the point, or resume at the point at which you left off.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't gotten that deep into it either. I basically just use it for simple uploading and downloading. I don't do anything real complex with it, but I was using IE, and just kind of got tired of using IE for everything like that, and buddy of mine suggested FileZilla, and you know, he said it was free, and so you know, I tried it out. I picked it up real quick. It wasn't hard to you know, get used to using, and you know, it was really accessible. So, but I haven't tried any of that where you'd have a broken download or anything. I haven't really looked into that too much yet.
Well, it seems to me that when you get on some of these FTP servers, you know, where you got not enough bandwidth in proportion to the number of people who are trying to download, that's where the likelihood of disconnects seems to be greatest.
Yeah, I'm assuming that stuff will set in the queue list, even if it stops, and there is a way, I do recall seeing, to tell it to resume. I think that will carry over from one session to another. I don't think it goes away once you close FileZilla, but I'm, you know, not real sure there.
Yeah, I seem to recall seeing where you could save the queue. I think you had to save it somewhere. In other words, I don't think it was an automatic thing, but I could be wrong about that. But I do think, of course, I hallucinate a lot in my old age, but I seem to recall that there was a command there to save the queue to some file.
Yeah, you're probably right. Like I said, I hadn't messed with it too much, but that would make sense, and then you would just reload and restart the queue at a later time, and I guess it would have enough sense to start your broken file back off where it left off on downloading.
So are you still as pleased with Vista as you were a few days ago?
Well, you know, I still want to try Vista, but, you know, I haven't gotten that far yet, so don't really have much more information on it, actually.
Well, what is the current status with JFW? I'm a Windows user, so, and I have JFW on my system, but I use it only for those situations where if Windows won't do something I want to do correctly, I'll give JAWS a shot to see if it will. Because as you know as well as I do, there's no such thing as the perfect screen reader. So I seem to recall hearing that there was a beta of JFW out that would work with Vista, and yet I recall seeing, I think it was on BCT as a matter of fact, guy saying that Eloquence wouldn't work with it, so you had to have a hardware synthesizer. So to your knowledge, what's the current status of it?
I don't think any of that's true. You know, I heard the FS podcast that Freedom Scientific does, you know, Eric Damery and what's the other guy's name, Olson. They were using Eloquence, and I've heard other people saying that they were using Eloquence, so I don't believe that. Somebody may have been having trouble on the list, but no, that's not true. I'm sure that Eloquence is working just fine with it.
What would you suggest as, let's see, how shall I verbalize this? I really am about ready to make a serious attempt to learn JAWS, not because I'm unhappy with Windows, but I would like to be equally proficient in both screen readers. And I know that, of course, the JFW has the context-sensitive help, which is very good. You can learn the basics from that. But in terms of systematically learning the intricacies of JFW, not to write scripts, but just so that you learn, for example, how to use the various cursors and things like that, and the not so obvious features of the screen reader. What's the best way to systematically learn it?
Good question. I don't know. I, you know, just basically have learned it on my own as I've went over the last 2 years now. And, you know, when I get stuck on something, I just ask a question. I don't have a good answer for that, to tell you the truth, because, you know, FS doesn't really provide a lot beyond their you know, their help that they provide with JAWS, there's not a lot of tutorials on it. And, you know, I really don't know.
You know what I need as much as anything, this sounds ludicrous, I guess, but it's the truth, is the discipline to start it and stick with it. And because of that, I was kicking around the idea, there's this place in fact, they posted up. I got the info from the BCT list a couple of months ago, maybe 3 months ago. There was this gal that posted a notice that at Vancouver Community College in BC, they were hosting an online course in you know, that sort of thing. And I was really kicking around the idea of signing up for that, because that may kind of give me the push I need to work at it on a regular basis.
Yeah, you certainly could. And, you know, I'm sure there's people on the BCT list that could help. I certainly can train JAWS to at least an intermediate level, maybe a little bit of the advanced level, but I certainly can do it too. I haven't got around to doing any tutorials on it, just on the site, but, you know, I definitely can do it if somebody was interested.
I was wrong. I said that was on the BCT list. Actually, it was on the Bookport list that I got that. But I read so darn much email every day. Well, I skip as much as I read, probably more. But I'm on a number of lists, and half the time I can remember seeing something, but I can't remember where. So I always say go by what I mean and not what I say. But yeah, I just gotta, you know, I really want to be proficient in both. So I'm just really gonna do something so that I can really learn it. Is there, you know, I know there's new features from one version of JFW to another, but am I correct in assuming that the basics pretty much stay the same from one version to the next?
Yeah, definitely. All the core functions of JAWS really don't change a whole lot. The cursor reading, the basic reading, most of the hotkey navigation for the internet, all of that stuff pretty much has stayed the same as far as I can tell from the last three versions. You know, they add to it definitely, but I don't see a lot of change in just the basic core stuff.
How would you assess 7.1 version versus the current incarnation of 8. whatever they're up to?
Well, mostly what I do, I don't have any trouble out of 8. I have a few little bugs with it. 7.1 and 8 are having some virtual buffer issues with Internet Explorer 7 and Outlook Express. As far as if you're using HTML for your message format, I've had some issues there. It has been getting better, and you know, hopefully they're going to get it fixed. But I don't think there's a tremendous difference between 7.1 and 8.
But we have some new participants that perhaps we can welcome.
Hello, everybody. This is Rich Cavallaro. Some of you may have seen my name on the BCT list.
Hello, everybody. Whoever was just speaking, your mic volume is very low.
Sorry about that. Is this any better?
Yes, that's much better.
Hi, guys. This is Sky Taylor here.
Hi, Sky. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Where's everybody located? I live in Northern California, and I know, of course, because we're talking about this being in the Eastern time zone, that Rick's got to be somewhere in the East, and I'm just curious to know where everybody's from.
Well, me, Rich, I'm from New York.
I'm from Western Victoria, British Columbia, Canada, so I'm in the same time zone as the dude from Northern California. Yes, and I've been to California before.
So now, are all the links working on the BCT site? Because I know that for a while some of the links are broken.
Okay, who's holding their control key down and not getting through? Whoever it is, you're blocking everybody from being able to talk, and we're not going to be able to do anything here if it keeps happening. Who was last talking? I didn't hear all of that. I think you said something about the BCT links. Yes, according to Larry, pretty much all of them should be fixed by now.
Oh, your control key is your hotkey. I'm sorry. It was me. I apologize, you guys. I've never been in here before, and I kind of thought that you could establish your own hotkey, and I've been doing stuff on here, and I'm really sorry. See, my stuff works. Yours doesn't. Ha, ha, ha. Oh. Once you start talking, it keeps going.
That is in your properties. If you go to file, and I believe... Yeah, she left, but you can change your properties for what your hotkey is. I have mine set here to my right control key, so JAWS doesn't interfere with it when I try to use my left control key. So if you haven't changed that in your settings, you might want to give it a try. Okay, I guess it's about 5 o'clock now, and what we're going to do today is just have a tech Q&A session. Pretty much anything tech is open for discussion, and I'll stop talking here and let some of the rest of you start asking some questions.
Well, I wasn't, this is Don Roberts speaking, I wasn't able to listen to the Goldwave chat. I'm going to play the recorded file, and maybe this was brought up, and I don't know. But I just recently became aware, and I didn't know if it was general knowledge, that, you know, one of my gripes about Goldwave in the past, I love the program. I especially love the tape recorder interface. But one of the things that has frustrated me was that I didn't think, could read the VU meters. But I find, in fact, that you can read the VU meters. I got a note from Chris from Goldwave just the other day that, I'm sure there's a way to do this in JAWS, but I'm a Window Eyes user, so somebody will have to translate this into JAWS. While you're recording, you can do it playing also. If you just hold down the control key, and then you can use what I guess you'd say would be your JAWS cursor to go up to right under where it says, up near the top of the screen, you'll see the VU meters. You'll see the elapsed time, and in that same line, if you hold down the control key, it'll show you the most recent peak. So you're actually able to read the VU meters.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yes, Don, that's new, I guess, in the latest versions. I don't know if that's 5.15 and higher, but I think it is. And I was told the same thing, that if you're holding down on your control key during recording, you can go up to the top. And while you're holding the control key down, it'll give you the peak readings on the VU as a percentage. And I guess 100% is equivalent to 0 dB. I definitely want to play with that. I want to do a recording on that at some point, showing people how to do it. But I haven't really gotten a good grasp on how to do it myself yet, so haven't got there.
I'm curious, this is Rich Cavalier, by the way, how does SoundForge differ from Goldwave?
I don't actually know.
That's like asking what's your favorite synthesizer. I think the general consensus is that SoundForge, is more sophisticated in the various things you can do. It probably takes more computer power under the hood to accomplish that. At least I heard Jonathan Mosden say that, and I certainly trust his knowledge on the subject. I'm really happy with GoldWave because I've heard some people claim that you can't do very precise editing with GoldWave, but I use both GoldWave and Total Recorder, and I use them for different purposes. I mean, I realize they're each sound editors, but I'm just saying that I love the tape recorder interface that GoldWave has, and I also love the ability to resample or change the playback rate. And you might say, well, what does that have to do with anything? Well, I love to, for example, I'll take a book that's on tape and I'll play it at four times the original speed and set the sampling, I don't know if it's a sampling rate or the bit rate, I get the two confused, to 48,000. Then if I change the playback rate to 12,000, then it's playing at the normal speed. And so I'm saying you can take and record a book from tape to your hard drive and a lot faster that way. And I'm just saying there's some wonderful features in GoldWave.
Yeah, but I myself, I also use JAWS as well as WonderWise, so I have both screen readers, actually. And I only have the demo of GoldWave, but I might register it at some point if I can find my registration code, which is deleted from my desktop, basically. I'm going to have to ask my dad to forward the information for me. By the way, Rick, I'm not sure if this, if you are Sandforge user, I say Sandforge is also good. I really enjoy Sandforge, and it's also very informative, and it's very cool.
I myself use Sandforge. I play with it a little bit, but I like Sandforge personally. This is my opinion, because especially when it comes to editing, you can use a lot of the same commands that you'd use something in like Word, as far as like selecting if you wanted to edit out like certain phrases or silences and stuff like that. So I think that's kind of a useful feature of that application, but you know, just my opinion.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too. SoundForge definitely has easier editing capabilities, definitely, than GoldWave. I'll definitely give it that. You know, SoundForge is definitely for the more professional user. It's not as accessible without scripts as GoldWave is, I don't think. And, you know, I'd love to mess with it, but I really don't have the money, you know, to get it. But, yeah, I think GoldWave, you know, for most of us, does an excellent job. And I've seen people pull off quite a bit of stuff with it, actually. So, you know, once you get used to GoldWave's editing style and, you know, how to do things in GoldWave, you can pull off a lot of stuff. I've seen people do radio shows with it, and, you know, they've actually created some really high-quality stuff. So each one of them, SoundForge and GoldWave, you know, definitely has their place, and, you know, everybody's going to, you know, have their favorites.
Well, one of the knocks on GoldWave tends to come from people who prefer more standard Windows commands than GoldWave uses. But I'm just saying, I love the tape recorder interface. I love the ability to go back and forth over a given spot as easily as you can. And I really think the fact that GoldWave does not use, you know, standard Windows conventions frustrates some people. And I can understand that. But I'm saying it's, to some extent, whatever you get used to. Although, as I said, I don't think there's any argument about the fact that SoundForge will you know, you can do some more sophisticated and precise editing than you can in GoldWave, but for the difference in cost, I mean, you got to factor that in. I think, and I don't remember when I bought GoldWave, but it was several years ago, and I still paid less than $45 US you know, to get it, and it's one of the best values I ever bought in a software package.
Yeah, where SoundForge really runs circles around GoldWave, from what I've heard, is noise reduction and effects. Things that SoundForge does much, much better than GoldWave. GoldWave's effects processing isn't really that great. And I think that's one place where SoundForge definitely runs circles around GoldWave, from what I've heard. And GoldWave's still about that cheap. It runs about $50, $45 to $50 US, depending on what the US-Canadian exchange rate is at the time.
Hey, Dan. Not a question about Sanford nor Goldway, but what speech synthesizer do you use with WinDoWise? I primarily use Eloquence.
Well, Sky, I prefer Eloquence. I know, you know, synthesizers are just unbelievably subjective. I mean, I've seen guys practically come to blows over synthesizers. They're so partial. But, you know, I say whatever works for you. But I really, Eloquence to me is, you know, it's certainly not humanoid, but I'm very comfortable with it. And I don't know if any of you on this remember the old Accent PC, but that was the first real synthesizer I ever had. The first synthesizer I ever had was an Echo PC, and that's probably the world's worst synthesizer. I had it with an old Apple IIc. But then my first PC, I had an Accent PC, and that was very responsive. And Eloquence sounds better than that. And it's still pretty darn responsive. It isn't as humanoid as some of these newer voices, but man, it isn't a resource hog either like some of the newer voices. So it depends on what's important to you.
I personally prefer, I agree, Eloquence is good. I use that, and also DeckTalk. Access 32 is another one that I use quite a lot as well.
Oh, yes. DeckTalk Access 32, that's good.
I never could get used to DeckTalk, really. I don't know. I started out on JAWS 2 years ago, and I've been used to Eloquence, and I prefer Eloquence, actually. But, yeah, you're right. People will come to blows over that question.
I mean, I don't mean to alienate anybody, but I just cringe at the sound of at least the incarnation of Deck Access 32 that comes with the WinDoWise. I think it's awful, but some guys think it's wonderful, and I find myself wondering how, you know, they could ever get comfortable with that, but I'm sure some of those same people wonder how I could ever get comfortable using an Accent PC. So it's just a difference in people.
By the way, hi Rez, how you doing?
Yeah, I don't like DeckTalk, but yeah, that's just, you know, everybody's different. It's the same thing. Some people love the book port. Some people love double talk. And personally, I can't stand it. So, you know, I guess it's just, you know, I've just gotten so used to Eloquence because that's all I've used in the last 2 years that I've been using JAWS. And I don't know, a lot of these synthesizers just sound just too bad for me. And the problem I have with things like NeoSpeech and AT&T Natural Voices and even RealSpeak is the inflections that they put into the speech that just, you know, the speech quality is higher, but the inflections that get put into the speech are sometimes just terrible. And I've also noticed that, you know, Eloquence pronounces a lot of words a lot better than, you know, RealSpeak or NeoSpeech or AT&T Natural Voices. I've had a lot of problems with all of those, just mispronouncing words, and, you know, I use them a little bit, but, you know, I'm pretty stuck on Eloquence here, too.
Well, I'm one of those diehard double talk fans. I started out using an Echo from Street Electronics for my first Apple IIe, so I guess if you can get used to that, you can get used to almost anything, but I still like the double talk. It's quick, responsive, and I like it.
I agree. I have been using DoubleTalk as well since the JAWS 3.0 days with a DoubleTalk LT external synth, and now I'm using it in the book port, of course. Actually, so I'm external here. It's still in very good condition. So I personally, I think that's a great synth as well. Very responsive and excellent for reading documents on the book port.
Hi, Sky. Well, Sky, hi. Excuse the pun. Hi, Jim.
Hey. Hey, Riz, just a quick question. Where did you get the game Mortal Kombat Deception from?
I nicked it. Okay, not true. I wish I'd nicked it.
Oh. Hi, George. How you doing? I think I heard your podcast on Blind Cortex, and I really enjoyed it.
I got a question. Somebody mentioned the book port, and we don't have to take it right now. We can keep the synthesizers if you prefer. But somewhere along the line, I wish somebody would address this. I'd like to kind of test, you know, there's a lot of guys here, and some of you obviously use the book port. I basically am just using the conventional alkaline, non-rechargeable batteries for that. There was some discussion on the Bookport list about recently about some guys were using, they said lithium ion, but I thought they were talking about lithium ion rechargeables. But when I checked with Batteries Plus the other day, I was told that they were really too volatile, and he couldn't even get lithium ion rechargeables. He could, in checking around, I think you can buy lithium ion, one-time batteries, primary batteries, I think they call them, but you can't buy lithium ion rechargeables. And I want to know, am I correct on this? And if that's the case, what is the best, the most cost-effective type of battery to use in the Bookport?
That I can't answer, but probably double A batteries would, but they're not rechargeable.
Well, that's what I've heard too. You can't get, I guess, lithium AA, AAA rechargeables. I haven't seen any either. They're probably talking about like the Energizer lithiums that are just one-time use. They should be real good. They should be about four or five times as long-lasting as alkalines, I would think. I use the Energizer Titanium or whatever. I get quite a bit of time out of those, but I primarily just listen to Audible books. So, I don't get the 50, 60, 100 hours, but, I do get, 35, 40 hours, out of a good set of batteries. But I don't know about the volatility of lithium batteries, but, all the cell phones and laptop computers and things like that, anymore all have lithium ion rechargeable batteries in them. So I don't know why we can't get AA, AAA lithium rechargeables.
Hey, Riz, I didn't get a chance to say hi to you. How are you? I haven't talked to you in forever.
No, you're right, Jimmy. We haven't spoken in ages. It's been a long time. How are you? And Jay, by the way, I hope you're all right. Where are my files?
Hey, guys. Talking here on a laptop, and the microphone's built into the display, so it's weird. I hope Josh isn't rambling. But with the book part, I heard a American Printing House podcast off their website that said, that this was last year, around October, that said that the book part 2 coming out would use some kind of built-in rechargeable battery. I also own a book part. The only reason I bought it was for recording for the blind books for my college classes. And I've been switching between regular alkalines and the NIMH rechargeables, nickel metal hydride. I use them a lot with some synthesizers, and they work for that. And they seem to work okay for the book port, but I know the manual even says try not to use rechargeables because they won't last. They don't seem to last as long as alkalines, and they do seem to be right with that from what I've read in the manual and from doing some testing. So, what I would do, I would go to a battery store and get like a bulk pack of like 48 AA's, and that should last you forever.
Very true. I myself use just AA's at the book port. I did hear that same podcast and some interesting stuff. And of course, we'll hear more on March 13th when Larry should be on ACB Radio's main menu to talk about that. But according to Rob from APHS, it's going to be a rechargeable battery, an internal speaker, and stereo recording. So, some interesting stuff coming. It'd be interesting to see how that compares with the Icon from Levelstar.
Jim, you sound like never mind. I'll start again. Right, I'll get a start. Jay, you sound like you went to the dentist, and I was going to say something to you, Jim, and I forgot.
I have a question, George. Why are you using your laptop? I too use my laptop as well, but I also have a desktop, and my laptop is using both sides and Windows. And it's pretty good. My laptop's got a built-in microphone. It's pretty noisy.
So, Riz, did you just not know who you wanted to speak to, or was that not directed to me? It was directed to somebody else. I couldn't really decide. I heard about three or four names called, but it's good to know things haven't changed.
I had no idea where I was going with that at all. I'm out of practice.
I know. Well, it's because you haven't been in here to keep the honed wit honed, and so you've got to get that touch back. It shouldn't take long.
Hey, guys. Here, just wondering, is there a way to find out who's speaking at the time? And Jaws keeps saying 0%, 15% for some reason, even though I turned the screen echo to off. That's okay, though. See, I have a Sound Blaster laptop card that I could plug into the PCI slot, and I was thinking about trying to edit, maybe edit one of the Jaws INI files to see if Jaws can use the built-in audio on the laptop, and maybe the Sound Blaster could use other audio or, you know, stuff like that, because I'm pretty amazed by this whole laptop sound card, the Sound Blaster. When you put it in, it automatically detects it, and it starts playing the audio, and you do have to have a speaker or headphones connected to it. Sorry, guys, back to the book for it. You know, I'm pretty satisfied with the original book port. I have a huge 1 gig text book collection of text files of different books like Stephen King and stuff. I put that on a flash card, and I didn't think I would use the book port for more than the recording for the blind textbooks, but I do start reading. I do use it for the reading the text, and I also use Devil Talk, Triple Talk, PCI card on my desktop, so I'm used to the speech for that. And with synthesizers, for me, here's my 2 cents. I want a synthesizer that will not strain the processor of the computer. I know Eloquence seems to be pretty good on memory and CPU usage and stuff, and that's another reason I use the PCI Triple Talk, is because I do a lot of composing and recording, and I don't want the computer to get bogged down with Jaws and stuff and the synthesizers.
To answer your question, Jim, no, the wit's still there. It's just the whole pressing the control key down and then talking and then remembering to remember what you were going to say when you remembered that you got to hold the control key down and all that. And Jay, this is Riz, the person you owe some Mortal Kombat Deception files to, and we haven't spoken in such a long time. Remember we discussed that whole thing about working on a game and stuff like that, you, me, and Clement? Well, that's who that is. And you can find out who, by the way, is talking by pressing Alt and U, and and then you just go to the top of the list, and whoever's talking is at the top of the list.
Well, that's good. The wit still there is, and I was going to make another comment. It because you get so used to Skype, and you don't have to use the control key. Although I wouldn't know, but anyway, I like my book port. I think it's probably been one of my favorite pieces of technology I've ever purchased. Except that I'm going to be really sad if I have to turn around and buy a whole new book port come this summer. But it may be worth it. I don't really know. It sounds like it's going to be a pretty slick little machine.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Larry has to say Tuesday night on ACB Radio as far as the details to the book port, too. I've only had my book port about a year, and I'm in no hurry to abandon it for a new book port, too. But, you know, if the features are good enough and, you know, they really can entice us with something really, really nice, I don't know. From what I've heard, just, you know, from the ramblings around the lists and the rumor mills, I think it's going to be something very, very similar to a stripped-down icon that Levelstar is making, because, you know, APH is in collaboration with Levelstar now on the icon, and I think, you know, it's very likely, you know, though this may not be true, and we'll definitely know Tuesday night, but, you know, supposedly it's supposed to be some kind of stripped-down icon.
You know, speaking of the book port 2 and the icon, I had a Packmate for about 3 years now, and this is my second unit because I had to get the first replaced, and I was actually thinking maybe over the summer about getting another sort of note-taker device. I don't really use it for the internet much. All I really need is a Braille display and a way to take notes, so I can write notes in it for a class to save my notes, and a way to transfer those notes to the PC or something. I got the Packmate thinking I would use it a lot, and I tried to, but I've had a lot of problems, you know, installing things on it and just getting it to work. And the icon seems pretty promising. I think maybe if I sold my Packmate with all its accessories and stuff, I can grab maybe the icon and some kind of Braille keyboard, Braille display, one of those little Bluetooth things that they have out now, and or even something, like I said, I'd like something with a Braille display. The Pac-Mate, it's good, but it does sort of crash every so often, and hardware-wise, it's built like a little flimsy thing. I had a Braille light back before Freedom Scientific Forum, and that thing could get hit by a tank and just stay intact, and the poor Pac-Mate seems like it would break very, very easily. And the Braille display I have, it's the way the build quality really doesn't get me, because one of the dots is stuck in the down position. One of the advanced bar buttons, you press it and it still moves the display, but you don't get the physical feedback that you normally do. This is my second display that has happened with the physical feedback button. Anybody have any thoughts on note takers? And I mean, if I could, I'd love to get a Braille Light Millennium and use a flashcard to just transfer my notes back and forth. That would be good for me, because battery life is good. Although, it would also be nice to have some kind of media player, but I figure you can't have everything. So, I am definitely thinking about selling that Pac-Mate, because I do. I have cards with it. I have a case with it. I could find someone who would want to use it and maybe get better use out of it than I could.
I'm probably not the best person to mention note takers, because I still have an old Braille and Speak that works perfectly. And while it doesn't have a Braille display, it's small and you can practically run over it with a car and it would still work. And I really like it. The Millennium would be great. I'd like that. And I was going to say one more thing. Oh, yeah, I hope in the whole process of this new book port coming out that it's not so expensive. because, the last one was, $400, I think? I can't remember. But, that was a sort of reasonable price for what you got. I hope this one, in the interest of trying to cram too much in, doesn't cost a whole lot more than that.
Well, see, that's kind of my concern, too, because it seems to me that there are a lot of people who are just constantly pushing to make the bookport into a computer, and that's not what it's designed for. And the more you crowd into it, the higher the price is going to go. And frankly, being retired now, I just really had to justify, putting the amount of money that I did, and I'm delighted with the bookport as it, currently is. I would like to see some things change, but the point is I'm delighted with the way it works. I would just hate to see you have to pay, $800 or $900 for all these other features, some of which you might not use very often. In regard to antiquated technology, I've got an old Braille Light 40 that is working just great, and I realize that isn't exactly state of the art, but it meets my needs in terms of a note taker, so I'm awfully happy with it.
Speaking of antiquated technology, Jim, how is the rest of you? All right. Anyways, the other thing I was gonna say is, can I test your Braille speaky thing and with the car? I don't mind rolling it over just to see if it still works afterwards.
If you got that Braille speaking, it works. Good for you, man. That's great, because I had a Braille 818, and I think literally the battery that was built into it, I guess it lasts about 5 or 6 years. It just sort of died, and at the time, I was starting my senior year of undergraduate school, and I needed something to use. And when I got the Pac-Mate, I was all excited about it. And then trying to use all its internet features and going through all the hassle of it, I realized I was better off just to use it as a note taker. But, I remember my Braille light once. It flew out of my book bag and hit a brick wall, and one of the keys broke off and hit my teacher in the head. And but the unit still worked great. The little circuit board inside got a little bit loose, and you could hear it moving back and forth if you shook the unit, but other than that, it worked. Same thing happened with that Braille and Speak. The battery just died, and I didn't really want to get it replaced. Nowadays with Freedom Scientific, you have to jump through 100 hoops just to send something back. And I've noticed some of the times, if you don't tell them specifically 100% what you want fixed, they won't fix it. But that's all right, I guess. That icon really does have me intrigued. I want to try to match prices. If I sell the Pac-Mate, I want to be able to see how much I sell it for, and then use that same money to get some kind of other note-takers thing. So, I'd like it, word processor notes. And maybe a music player would be nice, because I do a radio show at my graduate school, and I'm go to Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for music composition. And I do a video game music radio show every Monday from 1 to 2 Eastern, and you can hear it online. I can give you guys the address or something. But so far I'm using the Pac-Man. I'm hooking up the radio studio console and playing files through that. And it seems to be working okay. But like I said, that Braille display, I don't think I want to send it back to get fixed because I don't even have the maintenance agreement. And it's a long story, but like I said, I'm not satisfied with how the build quality of the Pac-Mate unit is. Just wow. I don't know if anybody's had one or seen one, but if you don't buy that $50 case that they have, and if you don't keep it in its case, it could get damaged real easily.
Well, Riz, before I forget, I wanted to answer your question about you wanted to test my Braille and Speak to see if the car would crush it. I don't mind at all. We'll just strap it to your forehead and you can lie down and, well, anyway. And Jay, if you're, I still hear your thing saying 0% or whatever percent it's saying. If you do Alt-U, it should take you to that box with all of us listed. I don't know if that will stop it from saying that or not, but I don't know if you heard Riz say that earlier, but anyway, just a suggestion. Anyway, that's all.
No, Jim, I was planning on driving the car, and Jay wouldn't listen to that because he's not listening to a word I've said so far. And Jay, I'll tell you what, I'll do you a deal. You send me my Mortal Kombat Deception files, and I will listen to your video game radio show. He said, how is that for a deal?
Okay, I just wanted to chime in here for a second. See, we've got quite a few people in here now, and I just wanted to welcome everybody to the tech Q&A session that we've had here since 5 o'clock. Anybody have any tech, more or less questions? You know, anybody having problems or anything like that? Hopefully we got people here that can answer your questions, and we'll be going on to about 7 o'clock, and then somebody else is going to be in and hosting just a general chat session. Everybody's more than welcome to stay over. You know, we're trying to kind of revive the chat room a bit and, get some people in here. We really haven't had a lot of people in here in a long time. So, you know, me and a couple others, just kind of our efforts in trying to revive the chat room a bit. But if anybody has any questions, problems they're having on their PCs or programs or whatever, you know, please go ahead and ask, and hopefully somebody here can answer, and all the tech talk has been great, too, so we can carry on with that, too. And I'll shut up now and let you guys talk again.
Yeah, Riz, okay, Jim, or whoever told this is still doing the 1% thing, but Riz, 17%. I do have those Mortal Kombat game soundtracks for you. I have a lot of game soundtracks now that I got over the last few months that I'm going to be using in my radio show, but I'm going home, I'm home now, and I'm going back to school, which I feel like is my home. I'm going back to school for at the end of spring break tomorrow morning, so I can still send stuff over SendSpace or something like that, or AIM, but unfortunately, when I get back to school, their network is very slow and sluggish, so I can only use AIM and Yahoo on their network. In fact, this has something to do with audio files. I downloaded the Switch audio converter that was listed in the book print manual, a good free audio converter. I use it on my desktop a lot, and for some reason, I have an MP3. I used to convert MP3s from like 320 kbps right down to 128, and it would just override the file I did on my desktop, and it would automatically just convert them. And for some odd reason, on the laptop, when I converted MP3 from whatever, maybe 320, convert it down to 128, it still seems to convert it, but it makes the file size larger from like 3 megs to 9 megs. It's almost like it's treating it like a WAV file or a different kind of audio file. I did fiddle with Windows Media Player 9 and 10 and 11 because, don't ask me why, but my laptop came with Service Pack 2, XP, came with Windows Media Player 9. So I tried to install 10 because I like 10, and it said this version is not compatible with this version of Windows or whatever. So I had no choice but to go to Windows Update and download 11. So I was having problems with 11. Now I rolled back to 9 last night, and I just want to have 10 in there. It's really sort of a pain. I work with a composer at school, and he uses a Mac once in a while, and he said or he uses Mac and PC. And he said, you know, a good thing with a Mac is you don't have to go through all this kind of stuff with, you know, if one bit of program doesn't work, it messes up the rest of your programs. But I am just getting started with this laptop, so maybe it's just, you know, getting things going with, like, a fresh Windows installation and putting in all my programs and making sure the right audio decoders and encoders are installed and all that kind of stuff. But,
0%.
So, yeah, basically, Riz, I still got those files. So if you want them even now, I could send them.
Just a real quick comment. I'm Jim in Texas, and I guess I'm supposed to be the one doing the chat at 7. We had talked about it, and we just picked a time, and so it'll just be general chat, and hopefully people will stay around for it.
You are doing the chat, Jim? Heavens. Dear me, what we all let ourselves in for. Anyway, Jay, can you... I haven't got AIM or the other one that you mentioned, Yahoo. Can you do it over Skype, maybe?
I could do it tonight. Like probably right now, if you'd like. Like I said, when I get back to school, the only programs I could use on their network seem to be Yahoo and AIM. And MSN, I could sign on once in a while, but not too often. Or I could just use SendSpace to send it.
Yeah, if you do it right now, we can do it that way. Right now it's fine for me.
George, do you use your laptop as your primary machine?
You know, as far as the Windows Media Player issue with 10, since you've dropped back down to 9, you might want to try and put 10 on it again and just see what happens. Maybe something just was out of whack, and hopefully, you know, going up to 11 and back down to 9, you know, it sure would be worth, you know, trying to put Media Player 10 back in again. That's a definitely strange problem. I'd make sure you did your automatic updates, have all your critical updates installed, and, you know, then go from there and see what happens.
Yeah, you know, I tried it a few weeks ago, and I had 11 since last night in there. I do make sure to have all my updates installed, and I have the mp10.exe, you know, the regular installation file for the last version of Media 10, and I'll run it again later, but I know I did try 11 and 9 and 9 and 11, and it always did say... I don't know. I think when 9 was in, it said it wasn't compatible with Windows. When 11 was in, it said that you already have a newer version. I don't know. It's really weird. It's really, really weird.
Jeb, by the way, if you want to add my Skype name, it's Riz, R-I-Z, figure 4, F-I-G-U-R-E, and then the number 4. Add that and then send it to me that way. It's the best way, I think.
Okay, does anybody else have any questions, any problems with their PCs or software or anything that maybe somebody can answer?
I use a dinosaur. Anyone who can speed up a dinosaur, I suppose, never mind.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. What are you running? I'm running a 900 megahertz laptop here, you know, as far as laptops are concerned, and... you know, it's actually running pretty good. You could try putting some more memory in it. That might speed it up a bit. What are you running?
You know, I'm going to brag on my laptop just because I can here. I just picked it up from adkaudio.com, or adkproaudio.com. It's specifically a place that customizes laptops for audio production and recording. I bought it off of the president of the dancingdots.com, who writes the... talking interfaces for Sonar and Sibelius and other music programs. This thing has 2 gigs of RAM, 2.0 GHz processor, although I think I probably could have gotten a little less of each, because so far I really haven't noticed much of a, you know, it acts just like my desktop 1.8, but a 7200 RPM hard drive, which is nice, because I heard that laptops mostly have 4500 RPM, and I guess so far, in I had to write a piece for a concert at the end of March that I'm performing, and I did it over spring break here on the laptop, and really, really nice for, you know, I could have a chat messenger programs and all that running at the same time as my music programs and being able to get recording done and everything.
All this wonderful silence.
Well, you guys are talking about dinosaurs. My laptop, I'm going to be replacing it
in the not too distant future, but it's an old HP 4150 running 98SE. It has a 650 meg processor and a 40 gig hard drive in it, which is kind of surprising that it has that big a hard drive. What I'm saying is it's running 98SE, and I can do, you know, a few very basic things, but the most frustrating aspect of this old notebook, and I bought it secondhand, so I didn't have too much money in it, but the most frustrating aspect of it is that it is not a multi-channel sound card. So fortunately, there's a serial port on the thing, so I can connect my double talk, the one that Larry sold, the light talk. I have a light talk synthesizer, so I can connect to it. You know, but I'm just saying, you guys talk about antiquated stuff. That's it. But I've been really kind of dragging my feet about sticking much money into a laptop. And when I do get one, a different one, I'll probably buy a refurb or something at the, you know, if I can just get something running XP home with preferably a gig of RAM, although I might have to settle for 512, I'll be pretty happy, particularly when it, you know, since it'll have a multi-channel sound card.
Yeah, what I really like about my laptop is if I'm writing a song, I would have to stick with my desktop. I had to stay at school for Thanksgiving last semester just to write a piece for my final exam. I live about 5 hours away from my house, so now with this laptop, I'm able to, you know, take it anywhere I want, and as long as I have a small little musical keyboard, I can write stuff and do stuff with SoundForge and all that kind of stuff. I like to go whole hog with things, and I've heard that there are, I know laptops have all these slots, that PCI Express and PCMCIA slots and stuff, and I heard that, I'm wondering if you can get a TV card that you stick in one of those slots, and then you hook up your cable TV to the end of the card, like a regular cable line, and you can watch TV. I used to have an old Gateway desktop that had back in 99, that had a TV card right when they were coming out, and it worked pretty good with a Winamp plug-in. I was able to go through channels and at least listen to the channels, because I read through Infotech Magazine from Brian Hartchin, his website. I don't know if they can be, if his magazine could be bought in the United States, but I know in the UK, one of his magazines, Table of Contents, said something about accessible TV products that let you record TV shows and schedule, look at your TV schedule and stuff, even if there was a card for the laptop that would let me browse channels, just listen to channels with keyboard shortcuts or something, or, you know, either a radio card or a TV, especially a TV card, because if I go to a friend's house or something and we want to watch something, we just hook up the cable line right to the laptop.
Well, here in the United States, I wouldn't spend any money on an analog TV card for the, you know, for the laptop, only because there isn't going to be any more analog TV what is it, 2009 is when it's supposed to end. They keep changing the thing. It used to be it was going to be when it was 80% saturation of digital, and then they changed that. And so the latest I've heard that is it will end as of sometime in 2009. Now, if that card then has inputs on it so you can patch your cable box into it, that's a different story. But if you're just talking about a TV tuner card, I wouldn't spend a nickel on it for that reason.
Yeah, don't worry about that. You know, they've said 2005, then 2006, then 2009. You know, they're having a lot of trouble, you know, convincing people to switch to HD here in the States. And what I would do, and you can get an ATI TV tuner, a USB 2.0 for like $60, and it's going to have S-Video and composite jacks into it. So even if you did go HD, you could still pipe, you know, signal into it. But, you know, that's pretty decent, and the software is, you know, decently accessible. It's not 100% accessible, of course, but, you know, I use the AGP version, you know, on my desktop, and, you know, I can record pretty much anything I want, and you can definitely, you know, watch TV on it, change your channels and everything through the keyboard commands. But yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about HD, and there are some HD cards out there that you can get, but you know, I'm not worried about that right now. You know, what the heck does HD mean to any of us?
Yeah, you know what? That sounds pretty neat, because I'll never forget that gateway. It was way back, you know, even, you know, 99 when DVDs were coming into their own, and the TV card only worked with the specific gateway video card, and the software did not work with JAWS, but then I found this Winamp plugin that did. It was really neat just to be able to hit the B and the next and previous B and the Z keys just to switch the channels, and, you know, some of it was in stereo.
Okay.
I used to open up SoundForge and record shows like that. But, yeah, if you can give me that model number, I would appreciate it, because that's not a bad price. And, you know, and if it does have different kinds of audio in and video in jacks, then maybe I can get rid of my little 13-inch TV that I have that I hook up the game consoles and DVD players to that. I could get rid of that and... you know, like I said, that would be nice to use it on the laptop, and you did say the software, obviously there's no JavaScript for it, but it does sort of work. That's good to know, because back in the old card I had all these weird video overlays that would go on top of me, and all these crazy, crazy things. Like I said, you know, it's just starting out, so maybe they had to do stuff like that, but maybe nowadays the software is more Windows-like.
Yeah, it's the ATI... TV Wonder, I believe, USB 2.0. And, yeah, the software's accessible enough. You can change volume, you know, by the plus and minus on the keypad. You know, you can record by doing Control-R. Channel up and channel down, or another key combination. I don't use that any, because I have a satellite receiver piping video into it, and I couldn't use the channel up and down anyways, but yeah, the multimedia software that comes with it's accessible enough. You can definitely get the job done. And I've seen it at Best Buy for $60-some, so, you know, I don't know. Sounds like a pretty good deal to me.
Yeah, you know, I'll take a look at it right now. With the software, you said the software works. I guess there's a list of keyboard shortcuts, and I'm assuming that, I guess, when you run it, it detects if you have cable running into it, and it scans your cable to the channels or something. Because back in my college dorm room, they don't have digital, it's an analog connection. I mean, yeah, they have like 70-something channels, though, which is pretty impressive. I'm used to the old 30 channels where I used to be able to memorize what was what. All I know now is 31 is MSNBC and 12 is a local news station, so... And I'm not used to all these 70 or 80 channels. And back here at home, my father and my family has a digital cable because my father's a golfer and he loves the golf network. And that, you got like more than 200 channels. Then you got a bunch that are blank, and then 700 is this and 800 is that. You got all your movies on demand stuff and da 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 da. I just want the old TV back. You know, just like for me, in my opinion, with cell phones, for example. You know, for me, you just use a phone to call somebody. You don't use a phone to take a picture or listen to music and browse the internet. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's just how I am, I guess.
I gotta get going. Jay, have you got my Skype name? I do really have to go.
You know what? I can't hear you that well on my laptop. You can add me to Skype. I'll spell out my name. It's all letters. It's FTEALU. CARD, and I'm on right now. So if you add me now, then I could send you. Oh wait, I can't. I don't have. You know, it's back on my desktop. I think the soundtrack is back on my desktop. But you know what? Add me to Skype anyway, and I can get your email address from you or something later, and I could email you the soundtrack to your fan space or something.
I too have Skype, and for those that don't have me on my Skype, bless my Skype username, it's Skyber, Skyber.
Riz, talk to me sometime. I haven't talked to you in forever.
Yeah, I certainly will. Did you get it, Jay? I'll certainly catch up with you sometime, Jim, if I can.
Yeah, check my website for the ATI Multimedia Center shortcut keys. They should work on the TV Wonder 2.0 as well. I don't think any of that's changed dramatically from the All-in Wonder on the desktop. So you can check there. You can download the text version of that file, and that should give you all the shortcut keys you need.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. By the way, George, on your laptop, do you just use JAWS or do you use Windows?
I have JAWS running with Eloquent so far, and it runs pretty good. Surprisingly, with the laptop, it doesn't seem to slow things down. And I play a lot of games for the blind, so now I'm installing all these games, and I have to email the companies and ask them for replacement registration codes. But that shouldn't go too bad, because I'm just going to tell them I'm getting a laptop, and they're pretty good about sending the replacement registration. So, yeah, Rick, thanks. I'm pretty excited. I'll just go to Amazon and just look a few I can find there, and I'll read about it, because I was thinking of the laptop of either getting the TV or a radio card. And I guess, you know, you don't need a radio, because you could get a radio. I have a little stereo, or my little MP3 player has a radio, or I can probably get a hold of a radio a lot easier than I can get a hold of a TV. So I think I'll look at the TV.
Yeah, the nice thing about the USB is if you have a desktop, you can plug it into the desktop too and, you know, use it on both. You know, if you get a PCI CMA card for the notebook, which I think you can. I don't know if ATI sells one or not, but, you know, then you're stuck with it just on the notebook. So, you know, the USB is flexible.
Yeah, I don't have any free slots on my desktop, unfortunately. Anyway, I have all five of my PCI slots are taken up. I got two sound cards, one for recording and one for regular Windows sounds, and I got a wireless card, that TriplePack PCI, and a video card, and gotta get a new video card that has maybe a thin sort of heatsink so the fan could blow the air where it has to go, because I guess the card I have now is NVIDIA, and it was down in my basement. My desktop was down in the basement for a while last year, and the fan got rusted. So I'm never going to have my computer down in the basement again. My little portable hard drive died down there, too. So, but yeah, that's a good idea about the USB, being able to take it back and forth between places.
By the way, Jay, do you also have a hardware synthesizer as well as this laptop?
Yeah, for the desktop, I have the PCI card of the TripleTalk PCI, and I've gotten used to it, and the only reason I bought it is to be able to do recording and music stuff, music production, without having to worry about JAWS yelling at me and stuff. And I wish they had a DeckTalk PCI card that you can install that sounded like the old DeckTalk from, oh, I think it was the mid-90s, when it was the DeckTalk PC card, I think. I don't know, the older voices. I think the newer voices on the DeckTalk sound a little strange from what I've heard.
By the way, Jay, can you take your TripleTalk and put it into your laptop? And then with your podcast in your dorm room, if you used your laptop to do the editing, what audio program did you use? And did you use your laptop, or did you have your desktop with you as well?
No, I think the PCI won't work with the laptop because it's a different card structure, and the card is a little bigger, and it wouldn't be able to fit in the laptop. But no, I could find ways to mute JAWS on the laptop if I had to. I'll see what I can do about that.
Yeah, because I basically use Eloquence on this laptop. By the way, what audio editor do you use on your computer, Joe?
Hey, folks. This is Joseph Lee speaking. It is nice to see you again on the chat list. This is my first time chatting here. So what was the question about that, the Eloquence and the laptop?
No, I was talking to Jay. I'm not sure Eloquence does run on the laptop. You can't run the TripleTalk on the laptop, that's all, because it's...
Well, you can just select them. TripleTalk is one of the synthesizers from when you install JAWS. And then you can press Control Insert S to switch to TripleTalk under JAWS and see if it does talk or not. And if it does not talk, then there might be something wrong with the triple talk or something like that.
Yeah, I think he was wondering, can you use the triple talk PCI card on your laptop, which you can't because of the way the card is made for a desktop, but they do have the USB synthesizers out now. I think there's a triple talk USB synthesizer.
The PCI cards on the laptops are very different from the one on the desktop, because they usually use PCI Express these days. So if I have a choice between a triple talk PCI and triple talk USB, I would say that you might want to get a triple talk USB, or better, you might want to get a DAC talk USB or any other USB synthesizers.
Yeah, I don't actually have a triple talk, but I have a DAC talk Express.
And does your laptop have a RS-232-0 port?
Yeah, it's got a serial port. I also have a desktop sitting right beside me.
And did you select Triple Talk Express as one of the synthesizers when you installed JAWS?
No, I don't have the DuckTalk Express installed, apparently. I have to find a box and reconnect it.
Just to clarify things, as far as the notebooks and the PCs, notebooks use PCMCIA, and it has nothing in common with PCI or PCI Express. PCI and PCI Express are only used on the desktop, so there isn't any way to switch back and forth. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking. And just to also clarify, the PCI, these days PCI cards are usually phased out, and usually these are replaced by PCI Express components. On the laptop, even though you have a PCI, even though you want to use a triple talk PCI, I think I would say that there's no way to do it. If you want to use a triple talk, I would say you have to use USB or triple talk Express if you have a 9-pin serial port.
Yeah, and you're probably not even going to easily be able to use a serial, because most of the newer laptops don't even have serial. So yeah, you're probably going to just have to stick with a USB.
Hey Rick, do you have JAWS on your Windows 2000 notebook, or are you using Thunder on there?
I'm using JAWS on everything. I really don't care much for Thunder.
So do you have a demo of JAWS on your laptop, M2K?
No, I upgraded my standard to professional, so I don't have to use a demo anymore.
I should also point out they're also going to have the Thunder guys on main menu next month to talk about Thunder.
I think you'd be better off using NVDA, would be my personal opinion right now. I'm not real thrilled with Thunder. There's just too many things they make you do, changes they make you do, and I don't like the fact that you have to use their text version of Internet Explorer and, in Outlook Express, you have to use text messages instead of HTML messages. I just don't like that. There's just too many hoops you have to jump through to get Thunder working right, and I really like the NVDA a lot better.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I have used Thunder a bit. Basically, for some screen readers, they use a text version of IE, and this is not the way to go, because the blind person, what they need, oh, sorry for not clarifying enough. The IE, what I don't like about it is Thunder and other screen readers that use IE, like their own version of text version of IE, is that they do not present web elements. They do not present web elements as such. They do not present links correctly. They do not present headings correctly. They do not tell you whether the link has visited or unvisited status, or whether and some such. So that is my main opinion against using a screen reader that has their own Internet Explorer-like browsers.
Well, I don't really like the thought that Thunder limits you. I really think that the developers should make Thunder money, but I'm not sure if there's ever going to be a Thunder in audio format for blind quartet, because like the way they require you to use the train messages in instead of HTML messages. That really gets us kicked off.
Yeah, right. Also, I would like to also bring up the subject of JAWS 8.0.1163 with both Windows XP and Windows Vista. I have tested the latest JAWS 8 version with Vista Machine, and I have to say that I'm pretty impressed. Although some issues that were presented since 8.0 days has not been fixed, there is an ongoing debate in a JAWS users list that's located in the free list that I subscribed to. Probably Rick is also subscribed there. You might have seen that message, that there was a tremendous debate over whether issues that were detected with JAWS 8.0 with OE has still been fixed.
Yeah, I've seen that, and I continue to have issues with OE. As far as messages getting hung up, you'll be reading through a message, cursoring through it, and it'll just stop reading it, and you have to close the message. You know, still having some of the virtual buffer problems on OE and IE7, although not as bad as with the original release. I also get some problems with focus issues and Notepad and a few other places when I'm trying to copy and paste text or save text. I'll notice that the cursor isn't where it's supposed to be once I perform that process. I've noticed that on the newest, the release, the, what is it, 1163. Still haven't been able to do Vista yet. I don't have Vista, and I'd like to definitely get into that, but I'd say it's getting better, but it's definitely not fixed.
That's why non-visit desktop access is a good choice, because you can use our SAPI 5 synthesizer, and they are working on a SAPI 4 driver, so perhaps they'll have a working SAPI 4 driver in a few months, and you'll be able to use the ETI or quantum synthesizer that can get window-wise.
Yeah, I tested system access, and I would say that is I was impressed with it. The other issue that I had with JAWS 8.0, but also with 7.1, was that once you set up a sound scheme to notify you a certain web element with a different voice, say if you want Shelley or Glenn to tell you the link on the web page, it will not work because JAWS 7.1 and onwards use a different approach, what's called the Document Object Model, DOM, to show web pages, instead of the traditional method that JAWS 7.0 and earlier used. And that was my chief concern with JAWS 8.0 and 7.1.
Yeah, I gave that up. I was using the sound schemes too. I was using the web rent-a-crowd to have different links and elements vocalized differently with different voices. And I noticed as of 7.0, 7.1, that pretty much doesn't work properly anymore. And I've just given it up. And I've kind of gotten used to, again, just having the one voice. But, you know, it would be nice if they fixed that.
Yeah, I've noticed it too, and I have emailed Freedom Scientific about it. There was a specific bulletin. It's not a bulletin. It's a specific list where it says that with JAWS 7.1.500, that particular speech sound scheme has been fixed. But as of now, what I found out is that if you had JAWS 7.1.452 installed, and if you upgrade to JAWS 7.1.500, it'll be fixed somewhat. But if you install JAWS 7.10.500, then you will still see that you'll experience the problems with speech and sound schemes.
I'm actually using non-visual desktop access right now. It's a really nice screen, though.
Well, I see a few more people have come in since 6 o'clock. You know, welcome, everybody. And if you have anything to add to our discussion here, we're just basically in a tech kind of chat session. We're just bouncing tech ideas back and forth. And if anybody that has come in the last few minutes has anything to add, you know, we would sure welcome it. We're going to be talking here a bit more till about just before 7 o'clock, and then somebody else is hosting another chat here at 7 o'clock, just a general chat, and hopefully people will stay around for that too. So just wanted to chime in here for a minute and welcome the new people that have came in, and hope you'll give us some comments too. Thanks.
Hello all.
Hello. By the way, Joseph, have you tried non-visitor desktop access?
I tested that.
It's a really good screen reader, and they're going to be making SAPI support. Rick, what is SAPI support? What month are they going to release a version with SAPI support in? SAPI 4 support in, even though since they're having too much trouble on it at the moment.
Well, I don't know about that. I received the Saratech newsletter for a while. The reason why I mainly tested out the system access was that there was a post on the burnout list that talked about movies, and one of the members have just suggested that I go to system access and sign up with them because they usually have a service for movies, and that was a primary reason why you tested system access. I do not test it anymore. I am planning on either leave it on my desktop or just uninstall it. But since my demonstration date has expired, I might have to uninstall it.
It's not the thing about system access. It's non-visual desktop access, which is written by a gentleman by the name of Michael Curran.
Hey, I've got a question about recording, and I'm sure some of you would know the answer to this. I just can't figure out how to make it work.
I'll try to answer both of you at the same time. No, I thought it was Saratech. Sorry for not understanding that much. No, I haven't tested that desktop access. In form recording, do you have a particular audio editing software that you want to use?
Yes, I'm currently using Audacity. It's honestly the only recording program I could get to work right at all.
Yeah, there was a discussion about Audacity, I don't know how I'm pronouncing it, on the, I believe it was on BCT list a couple of weeks ago. Rick, remember it? Neil Ewers mentioned it? I don't have Audacity. I don't know how I'm pronouncing it. I'm sorry for not pronouncing it right. But, yeah, if you know the hotkey commands for recording it, then you might get going with recording, but the first thing to do is set up your microphone or the input device so it will record properly, like volume, the level, and the sound effects, etc. My preferences for audio recording software is either CoolEdit/Adobe Audition and GoldWave, I would say that.
Yeah, what I'm having trouble with is I can record my voice just fine. The mic works just fine. What I'm having trouble doing is getting it to record sound effects from the computer. I mean, it picks it up, but really quietly, and I don't know how to make it into so where you can hear it well. And I want to do some reviews of stuff on the computer, and I can't do that if I can't get the sounds to record.
Yeah, you're going to need to boost your wave recording volume. I don't use Audacity, so I don't know exactly how to use that or do that, but sounds to me like you need to boost your wave recording volume, because I kind of do things with that, with GoldWave like that, where I can record different effects on the computer, and I don't have a problem with it, so I would suggest, you know, checking your wave source recording levels and, you know, bump them up a fair bit.
Yeah, what I suggest is that you go to volume control, press Windows key and R, then type SNDVOL32, enter, and you should see the playback recording. You might want to go to wave volume and increase it up to 100%. Or if it says like a master volume, main volume, just increase up to 100%. And then you have to go to menu bar, go to options and properties, and select the recording from the combo box, actually the radio button, and then you have to increase the microphone volume to like 30%, 40% in order to record it right.
Now, what they're trying to do is they're trying to record wave from the PC. They're not trying to use the microphone to do it. They're trying to actually record from the wave source on the computer, it sounds like. I don't think they're trying to record wave sounds from the microphone. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm trying to record wave sounds directly from the PC. I don't know if I need a special cable to do that.
No, just go into your recording properties and select the wave source and make sure the volume level is up high enough on that, probably somewhere between 80 and 100%. And, you know, that should work for you. It's probably just set too low, and it would be the recording property, not the playback property.
Yeah, that's what I mentioned. Yeah, if you go to recording properties, there should be a setting for like a wave source. If you're going to record something from your PC, that in order for optimal results, I recommend that you set the wave source to about above 70% to record it, I would say, properly. Rick, do you have any ideas?
No, that's what I would do too, and that's typically what I do in Goldwave. I set it to somewhere between 70 and 90%, 100% sometimes. It just depends on what you're trying to record.
I have a question. By the way, Rick, you know non-visual desktop access, since Michael Kern is working on a SAPI 4 driver, which month, when is the non-visual desktop access with the SAPI 4 driver going to be released in so that we can all use SAPI 4 support like Eloquence and Real Voice and all those kinds of synthesizers?
I don't know, Sky. I don't work with Michael on any of that. I'm just using the program. I really don't have that close ties to Michael, but from what I've heard, they're definitely working on it, and it should be within a month or two, I guess. But you might want to get on the mailing list and ask directly there. I really don't have an answer for you.
Yeah, I'm already on the mailing list. People have asked that. Why the SAPI 4 driver, the non-visual desktop access revision 164, and that allowed you to change the voice via the NVDA.army file, but there was no dialog boxes in that version.
Right, and, you know, I'm just going to have to wait and be patient. I don't know what else to tell you. You know, you could ask Michael directly, I guess, but I would say it's going to be a little while at least. You know, they said they're working on it. All right, does anybody else have any other questions or comments?
I just went into my volume controls, and I went to the audio properties. I went to sound recording. The only device that it gave me the option in the combo box for was the Crystal WDM Audio. I clicked on sound recording volume and boosted. They only had MIDI balance and MIDI volume and CD audio balance and CD audio volume. And I don't know if this helps, but I'm using Windows 2000.
Wow, that's really strange. What's your sound card?
It's internal. I don't have any, like, external sound card, like a Sound Blaster Live or anything.
Okay, well, you still should have a Wave recording source, as far as, well, be my guess. You say you're running Win2K. Shouldn't really be any different, but yeah, you should have a Wave recording source that you can adjust the slider on. If you don't, I'm not sure what to tell you there. Maybe Joseph has something to add on that.
One sec. I think I actually do, but it's not in the properties. It's just in the volume control itself. Hang on a minute. Let me check.
Yeah, let me. Yeah.
It should be under properties dialog. If it's at like a Crystal Audio, that's your sound card.
Okay, yeah, there was a wave balance and wave volume. I just boosted that to 100%. Do you think will that help it?
Well, make sure you're in your recording properties and not your playback properties. But yeah, if you're in your recording properties, it should definitely help it.
Wait, I think I'm in my playback properties. Sorry about this. I'm not used to recording. I'm very new at this. Let me go adjust it again.
Okay.
Go to properties and add the adjust volume for. There should be a combo button. There should be a radio button there. You just have to press down arrow on that radio button to select adjust volume for recording.
Okay, there we go. I found it. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, that should make a big difference, because you can boost your playback all you want, and that's not going to affect you any when you're trying to record. But, you know, check your record setting. It's probably just set too low. It's probably set to, you know, 50% or less, so just, you know, boost that up.
Yes, I looked. The wave volume was actually at 49, so I just boosted it to 100%, and then I went into properties and set adjust volume for recording, so that should probably do it, right?
Yeah, it should. By the way, does anyone know if VoiceBot is going to show up? Because I think he was going to show up after he got home from church, but I don't know if he got home from church to show up yet.
Also, Is anyone familiar with the Sony IDC P320 digital recorder or any of its variant models? Because that's what I'm using to record other podcasts that don't involve the computer.
No, I'm not familiar with the Sony digital recorders. But as far as your volume question, you select properties to recording, then raise the slider. What it sounded like you did before, possibly, and I may be just misunderstanding you, but it sounded like you might have raised the playback. But yeah, you select your recording properties, and then you go to the slider and raise it, and then you can exit out of the volume control. Sky, Ray said he was going to be here, and apparently he isn't going to make it, or he's going to be late. I don't know what else to tell you.
Yeah. For the person who asked for Sony recording, there is, I believe there is a podcast on the BCT website that details the usage of Sony recorder. I don't know who has it, but someone like Neil Yours, if he's around these days in the chat room, probably he might answer you, or someone like Laurie Hoffman or someone else who has a Sony recorder. Or probably Kenneth Reed or someone else might answer your query.
Yeah, I'll definitely go into the mailing list and ask Neil or one of the others. Yeah, somebody's probably got it, and they'll know.
Yeah, Neil is a good person to ask. Let's hope that Rayport shows up, because I think he's late, because he's always in bare feet.
Okay, what I did was I clicked on adjust. I checked the radio button, adjust volume for recording, and I clicked OK. And then the only thing it came up with were MIDI balance and CD audio balance and volume. So I don't know what to do to get it back to where, like, it had all of it, like the master out, the digital, the wave and all that, or if I just can't adjust that with recording, which would be weird.
Check the combo box once you select for the radio buttons for recording. Tab down, you should have a combo box that has certain items in it, and they'll either be checked or unchecked. Make sure, if you have that the wave is checked. It's probably just limiting you on what it's showing on the display panel, but there should be one for wave. Just make sure it's checked, and then the slider should show up. I don't know any other reason why you'd be that limited on the recording properties.
By the way, what screen would I use? I'm talking to the other lady who's having that volume problem.
Here's what I have. I've got what's called the mixer device, and there's Crystal WDM Audio, and I think that's the only one. Then I've got the adjust volume for recording. Then I've got a list view that has like 7 items in it, and let me look to see what those 7 items are. I can tell you.
Right, in the list view, make sure the wave is checked. You can limit what the volume control shows you by unchecking and checking those various devices. And I'm hoping just your wave is unchecked. And once you check it, it should show up on the sliders.
Well, let's see. All it has is recording control, CD, MIDI, digital, line in. It doesn't look like it has wave. Let me check one more.
I guess it's possible, since it's an internal, that it's just not allowing you to record from the wave source. But that would kind of be strange. I'm not sure.
My laptop's got an internal sound card, and I'm able to record from the wave source.
Yeah, it would vary from from laptop to laptop, just depending on the sound card, internal sound card it has. I suppose there may be no wave recording capability on that particular one. I don't know. That would be rather strange, I would think.
Well, okay, I think I managed to get it to work. The only way I'm really going to be able to tell is by recording on Audacity.
Audacity? That's pretty cool. I think concerning about Wave 4, I bet Wave 4 is late.
And if you can't get it to work, if you're on the Blind Cool Tech mailing list, you can definitely ask about it there. There's a few people using that there, and I'm sure somebody could answer your question. And if you're not on the Blind Cool Tech list, if you're on the PC Audio list, there's a lot of people there that use it too that probably could help you out if we're not able to.
Yeah, I am planning on uploading a couple of podcasts. I've got a space one, and I'm going to do that as soon as I get my disk space cleaned up for enough space to get it on there. I also have an introductory podcast in the works, which I will also upload when I have enough disk space.
Great, sounds good. And hope to see those pretty soon. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to talk about? I don't think we have a whole lot more time left here before the 7 o'clock starts. Let me see what time it is. We got about a half an hour, but there will be another chat session going on, just a general one here at 7 o'clock. You know, everybody's welcome to stay over and listen to that and talk in that. But if anybody else has anything here, go ahead and we'll see if we can answer it.
I don't know, but concerning your time in Ohio, it's actually 3 my time.
Yes, I do have a space podcast. I do have an introductory podcast. I'm planning on doing at least 3 others. One is definitely going to be a review of Audacity once I get that working. One is probably going to be a review of my digital recorder. One is going to be a review of something called Inform 7. It's a programming language for creating interactive fiction. And the reason I'm going to do a review of a programming language is because of its very unique features. And, oh yeah, there's one other. I am planning on doing a sound scene tour of, actually, the Mall of America.
Well, that should be interesting. The Mall of America is huge. Hey, we'll be looking to hear that. Everybody will love the sound scene tour.
The only thing I'm trying to figure out is, that's another thing I wanted to ask. How much can I expect to pay for a cheap set of binaural microphones? I'd like some for my digital recorder.
Probably at least $50 to $60, I would guess, and up.
Yeah, my digital recorder is not the best. That's about what it cost me. It's not the greatest, and I don't know how much it can be enhanced by a microphone.
What kind of binaural mics would anybody recommend? I've actually been thinking about getting one of those, and also one of those little stereo flip-up mics to go onto my Plex Talk, since I think the microphone quality in that thing is pretty horrible. Love the Plex Talk, but the mic isn't all that good.
Yeah, there was a discussion about what microphones are best, and there was a discussion about binaural mics. Probably you might want to ask Kenneth Reed or someone like Jonathan Mosen or Julia Aguilar, because Jonathan Mosen has some binaural mics, and I believe he made some commentaries about that. And there is a podcast on the BCT website, I believe, that talks about binaural mics.
Okay, yeah, I think I may have seen that there. I just, of course, am sometimes lazy, and it's so much easier to ask somebody. But, yeah, I think that probably would be a good place to go. And thanks for reminding me that was up there.
Yeah, because I've used this microphone, and I don't know how much I can because I don't know what the sampling rate is it records on, but the software that goes with it is when you save the file, you can save it as a 44 kilohertz stereo wave file, which it doesn't allow me to actually record, so I don't know how much improvement I will get when I actually do save a file off my digital recorder to my PC.
Yes.
Well, you'll just have to try it and see what it does. I really don't know too much about the Sony recorder and what its format is, So I can't answer that. Maybe somebody else could, but just save it off and try and see what it sounds like, I guess. But the external mics probably will help. They typically do. I know on my Olympus, the external mics definitely pick up better.
Yeah, the other reason I want an external mic is so that I can just put my digital recorder in my pocket and record, because it doesn't have any kind of lanyard to hang around my neck, so I have to hold it whenever I want to record anything, which can get inconvenient if I'm trying to do something.
Right, yeah, and that would be really noisy. You'd get a lot of handling noise, and people don't like that either. Yeah, give it a try. You know, even if you just tried some cheap mics just to see what it does, you know, give it a try and see how it works.
Yeah, I could use the mic I'm using right here for it. The only problem with that is the back of my computer is really confusing, so it's almost impossible for me to find the port once I unplug the mic to plug it back in again.
Well, you could go to Walmart or Radio Shack or something, and you could buy a cheap microphone to just play with, probably for, you know, 10 or 12 bucks, you know, if you just wanted to, you know, mess with something just to see how works. I wouldn't unplug the PC mic either if you're not going to be able to find out where to put it back in.
I went to Radio Shack not long ago looking for a mic, an external mic for my recorder, and they had nothing but PC-related stuff. They had absolutely no mics for stereo recorders. They had these big boom mics and stuff for your PC, but they didn't. I was amazed.
Yeah, I actually have used this mic for my digital recorder once. It did actually make it sound marginally better. It still didn't make it sound great. But, yeah, I believe I got this from CompUSA, but yeah, it did work with my digital recorder just fine.
Yeah, Radio Shack's kind of going downhill. I don't think they're what they used to be, unfortunately, and I didn't know they didn't have any of those type of mics anymore.
Well, I was totally amazed. I mean, Radio Shack's always been sort of on the low side of audio stuff, but they used to have all sorts of interesting things. Now it's like a big, cheap stereo computer store, kind of. I mean, and I guess there's nothing wrong with that. But I was really surprised they didn't have any microphones. I need to go in and ask them for, see if they sell any reel-to-reel recorders and see what their reaction would be. That might be fun.
Yeah, they wouldn't even know what you were talking about. But, maybe try a different Radio Shack. Some I know around here, some of the Radio Shacks are better than others. But, yeah, they have been going downhill over the years. They're just trying to compete with the other places. You know, they used to have a good niche market, and, you know, back in the 70s and 80s where those kind of things were great. I used to go there all the time and used to buy all kinds of things, but, yeah, anymore it's just a cheap audio and cheap computer product store.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I went to two Radio Shacks and called two more, and none of them had stereo mics, and so finally I just gave up on them.
Yeah, I'd like to change the subject now. For a person who asked what MOV extension was, it's a QuickTime extension. It is generally is a QuickTime movie. Whoever just said, I believe Alan who said it right now, RealPlayer will not work. RealPlayer only plays RM files. The M4A, the MP4, I believe it runs in Winamp or Windows Media Player. A workaround that I found for playing MOV files on the Winamp is to associate the file with the Winamp. It'll fool Windows Explorer to believe that Winamp is associated with the MOV file.
Yeah, do any of you guys actually play interactive fiction of any kind?
I do. I do play interactive fiction with Brionno Keysoft 7.2 on my Empower. I actually have a collection of 287 games with me that's around 30 megabytes in size. That includes the classic Zork series and the Harry Potter series, which Brionno List has talked about.
Yeah, this is Jay here. I love interactive fiction. I've been playing those games ever since, maybe about 10, 15 years now. Since I went to college, I stopped playing them, but whenever I have a chance, I go back to them, and I luckily purchased this CD called The Classic Masterpieces of Infocom, the old text adventure company from the 80s. I managed to pick it up back in 1996 when it first came out, and it has almost every Infocom game, and the other ones that it didn't have, I got from friends, and they were very, very enjoyable A lot of websites have solutions on them or different ways of getting past the sometimes you might need the documentation to get past certain parts, and I really really have enjoyed those over the years, and in fact I might try to go back to them pretty soon with this laptop, maybe put them on the laptop and get back to playing text games.
Yes, I use my BrailleNote Empower Keysoft 7.2 to play them as well. I do not have a collection of 287 games. I do have the Zork Trilogy. I do have some of the classic Infocom games. I have the Zork Trilogy and the Enchanter Trilogy. Those are my favorite Infocom games. I really don't like a lot of the others. Oh, and I have the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but I'd love if you could send those 287 games to me, or, like, tell me what they are, because the games I have are all from the Interactive Fiction Archive, and they're only, like, the best. They've gotten 4 or 5 star ratings, mostly 5 star. But if you've got any other good games I don't have, I'd love to have them. I've never played a Harry Potter text adventure, ever, and that would be cool.
Are you the member of the Brono list? Because I've sent a couple announcements about my game collection, and several people, and some people from the Packmate list also asked me to send them the collection. It's in the 4 zip files, because a keymail only limits the attachments to 10 megabytes, so I had to separate it into 4 zip files. These, usually they have about 60 to 80 games in each zip file. So if you assemble it right back, it should have 287 files with 31 megs, so the size of 31 megabytes. Okay. If you write to me at Joseph Lee, josephlee.lee, 22590 at blindsca.com, I will attach the four zip files to you.
You know, I was wondering, I noticed I could not get, unfortunately, any of the Interactive Fiction interpreters to work on the Packmate, which is a pity. I would like to sell the Packmate eventually and get a new note taker for obvious reasons. But I wish that could have worked with the Packmate. That would have been fun playing those games on the go.
Yeah, I'm mainly speaking to Joseph here because he'd probably know. What's your favorite game? One of my favorites has got to be the Dreamhold by Andrew Plotkin. I love all of his games, and Andrew Plotkin, Emily Short, got to be my two favorite authors. One of my favorite games actually isn't a Z-Code game; it's a Tabs game called Worlds Apart. Another author I like, but am forced to use the solutions way more often than I care for, is Andy Phillips. Have you heard of any of these?
Hey, it's Jay again. I used to play these way back in the late 90s, and back when Andy Phillips was starting out with his games, I played a bunch of those. I mostly had to use blockers for them because they were so hard. His games are very, very, very hard. Even with the solutions, they're still hard. They're still pretty hard. I've heard of Emily Short. I haven't played any of her games I've heard of. I played the Dreamhold. It was pretty nice. I think it was probably the greatest tutorial game I've seen in a long, long, long time. I actually have a friend who I want to get into Interactive Fiction, and I'm going to have her play the Dreamhold game. I really do. If there are any other ones you could recommend, I really would like to get back into playing them. A few ones, there are more commercial games out there. There's one called Future Boy. It's by Ken Tessman. And you have to purchase it on CD, and it runs through the Hugo interpreter, and the version with sound has its own EXE file, but the version without sound can be played through the interpreter, if I'm not mistaken, and you have to use the JAWS cursor to read the text, but it does have voice acting and music and sound effects in it.
Yeah, I'll try to answer both of the questions. No, I never heard of that. I never heard of them before. Because I usually do not play the Interactive Fiction. The best game that I recommend is the Zork series and the Dreamhold, which I have a pleasure of playing it on the Brownups. Anna Dresner once commented that Pocket Frotz works with her Packmate BX. I don't know about it because I don't have a Packmate, but I'll eventually get it. She indicated that you have to use JAWS cursor in order to use it properly.
Yeah, oh, that's what happened with me. I meant by working, I mean working, I meant where it will read it on its own instead of you having to use a review cursor.
Yeah, if you guys want me to, I've got a lot of games on my Braille note that's upstairs. If you want me to, I can go get them and list them for you, because all of the games, I have played them, and they are very, very good. And I recommend both of you, who clearly seem to be interactive fiction. The current games, I mean, the 80s games are great. I will not say that they aren't. But I think some of the 90s games and games from the new millennium go way beyond that. So if you guys want me to get my Braille note, I can give you a list of games that I definitely think you should try.
Oh, I know they go way beyond. I remember I was a freshman in high school, and I think it was 95 or 96. They started the interactive fiction competitions. And I had time to actually play the games, because there might have only been maybe about 14%. 7 or 8 games per competition. Now there's like 30 or 40. 15%. But I remember there was a game called Travels in the Land of Erden by this lady named Laura A. Knoth. And I remember I either emailed her about how good it was, or I don't know, I emailed her for some reason, and she put my name in one of the thank you credits on one of the releases of the game, and I thought that was nice of her to do that. I agree with you. From what I remember playing of, you know, some of the... Oh, when did I stop? I guess I stopped playing the games around the recent ones around 2001, 2002. Ever since then, I haven't been keeping track of the newer releases. Some of the games are exactly what you said. They are much, much more advanced than the 80s-style games. And I like games that have less puzzles and more of a story. Either puzzles that are so common sense that you wouldn't even need a walkthrough, or maybe a multiple choice game, or some kind of, you know, game that has more story elements than having to figure out how to open a door, or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Probably to the person who had said he has a burn with a lot of games, probably if you are a member of the burnout list, you might want to consider writing a message saying that you have a lot of games that you want to give away, some of them. And if you're not, you might want to sign up with the burnout list and just say that you have a bunch of games and you want to give it away. Probably someone like several people on the BCT list, like Stacy Robinson and some other burnout users, might be interested in getting your games.
Yes, that is true. I'm actually creating a game. It's in its very early stages of production. It's going to be called Stories of Santara, and it's going to be used with the new Inform 7. And Jay and Joseph, if you've ever played the Z-Code games, you'll know what I'm talking about. Inform 7 is a new version of Inform that uses completely natural language. It only uses English. You don't have to actually learn a new programming language like C++ or anything like that. That's why I'm creating this. And I want Stories of Santara to be more story-based, but I also want it to be kind of large. So it is going to have puzzles, but I want there to be multiple solutions and multiple paths through the game. And the puzzles are going to be kind of unorthodox, because you're going to have an item that's going to let you get past a lot of things that you wouldn't be able to get past in other games as easily.
You know what? That sounds really fun. I have wanted to write a game. I've wanted to write games for years now. I was always scared off by, TADS, TADS, and Inform. I was scared off by them because of the, I couldn't really find any tutorials. I didn't know what to download to start developing, you know, working with JAWS and stuff like that. But I'd love to write something. I read voraciously. I read all the time. So I think this would be a good thing for me. And that's what threw me into the interactive fiction in the first place, was from reading books and you know, seeing how these are basically, you know, interactive novels, I guess. And but if you need any testers or help with ideas, we could talk on maybe one of the messengers or something, and I'll be glad to help you out with that, because over the summer I am going to be coming home from college, and I'm not really going to have much to do, Huh. He'll give you something to do.
Yes. Yeah, like I said, the item is going to be a medallion that's going to let you get past a lot of things that you wouldn't be able to otherwise. But, yeah, I'm still kind of working out the game. And I'd love to have beta testers. I'm going to need them eventually. But, yeah, it's if you're a fan of fantasy, you'll probably like this. It's actually... I've had this world in my head for a long time, and it's changed over and over. The geography has at times been completely reorganized, and I finally think I've found something that I'm happy with. So I am planning on writing a few short stories about it, and this game is going to be its main debut. The world is going to be Santara, or at least that's the continent where the main story takes place. It's definitely going to be fantasy. No sci-fi involved here. Lots and lots of magic.
That sounds good. If I want to ask, how did you learn the Inform 7? Did you just read the documentation or what? Because like I said, what scares me off is the whole learning programming languages.
Okay, well, here's what happens. You go to www.inform-fiction.org, you download the program, you install it, and it comes complete with everything. It's got a very comprehensive documentation with very to easy understand instructions and coded examples. It's got a recipe book for doing things that you might want to do. There are some parts that aren't accessible with JAWS, but those parts really aren't very important. It's almost completely accessible. Like I said, it uses complete English, no programming knowledge required, which is why I love it. And I think it's intended for more story-based games, though I'm sure you can create puzzle fests out of it if you really want to, though I don't like puzzle fests. My favorite puzzle fest has got to be, and I don't know if you've played this yet. It sounds like it came out right about the time you might have stopped. Not Just an Ordinary Ballerina by Jim Aiken. It's got an almost completely flawless hint system, and I love the way the hint system works, except for one puzzle, which was, the hint system was worded completely wrong, and I eventually had to ask somebody else for help. And I don't like puzzles that if it's a common sense puzzle that you could do and say, oh yeah, that makes sense. But the author of a game should not expect me to know how to translate a number from base 10 to base 7 to base 5 to get an entry code for a keypad. I was very disgruntled by that puzzle.
You know, I stopped playing when I think Andy Phillips' last game came out. I think it was the one where you were a superhero. Was it called Heroine's Mantle?
Something like that.
But yeah, I did hear of the Ballerina game, and Yeah. Andy Phillips' puzzles are like that. I think in one of the games, I got up to something where you had to do some big math equation, and I'm not good at math anyway, but I stopped there. I don't have them anymore because my computer got a virus, and I have a whole new computer now, but I used to have a bunch of game saves that I kept maybe about in the middle of different games, and I just got stuck on these puzzles, and the solutions wouldn't even help. But another game that just came to my mind... Once in Future, by a guy named J. Kevin Wilson. It was released commercially in 1997 or 98, and I actually have the original. I don't know what to do with it, because now the game's freeware, but the original came with, a little picture of something, a little letter, like little extras that immersed you more into the game, like Infocom used to do, and I think I still have it somewhere sitting up here. On my computer shelf, and it's neat to have something like that, because I think it went freeware 1 or 2 years ago, maybe even longer than that, and it's neat to know that it was released commercially, and more commercial interactive fiction, Knowledge Entertainment. I bought all their games last 2 years ago as a Christmas gift pack for myself, and he's a pretty good... He's a pretty good programmer. He writes in Inform, and they're pretty decent. And now I think all his games are bought, or you can buy them. I bought them on CD because I had to, but now you can buy them on digital download.
Evening, folks. Sorry I jumped in here and jumped right out again. Right as I entered the room, I had to take a call. But I'm here right on the tail end of the tech chat or the thingy. So good evening, y'all.
Yeah, good evening. So, Jay and Joseph, do you want me to go get my brown note? Because the games are very, very interesting. I've got everything from complete story-based IF to complete puzzle-based IF, and everywhere in between. And it's actually, like I said, the games are nothing but the best, because I've played all of them, and like you, Jay, I read voraciously, so I know a good novel when I read one. So do you want me to go get that list, and do you want to continue discussing this, or should we just drop out of this?
Yeah, hey, sounds good to me, and later on, if people want to talk about other stuff, we could talk on messengers or something. I have all my other messengers running now. I was considering going from a Pac-Mate to a Braille note just to have as a note taker. I'm so used to Windows that I'm afraid I might, I don't know, the Braille note might confuse me. But how's the web browser? Can you move line by line if you're reading an article, or can you move link by link, just like JAWS? See, I'm so used to JAWS, and unfortunately, I needed a note taker 2 years ago at the end of my undergrad schooling, and my agency who was paying for it said, you know, okay, we want to get you something right now so you could start your semester. So, stupid me, I didn't know what I was doing. I went right from JAWS, assuming that PacMate would be good, and I learned the hard way of the build quality, a lot of other... I am complaining, but I mean, it's still a great, great, great product. But I've felt somebody's Braille note last summer, and it seemed built pretty well. The buttons on the Braille display were rubber coated; they weren't the plastic that the PacMate has. You know, I do miss the interactive fiction, and it's funny that we're speaking about this tonight, because last night I was looking at starting kits for this friend I have in Pittsburgh, and sent her starting kits for interactive fiction, and I don't really know anybody else actually who plays it, so it's interesting to finally talk about it with somebody.
Pardon me, but Rick's trying to get our attention here, you guys.
Sorry.
Hey, thanks, Ray. I do need to wrap this up. It's coming up on 7 p.m., and we do have another person hosting a chat immediately at 7 p.m. I hope everybody will stick around and continue to talk. I appreciate everybody that's came in and contributed to our tech chat, and hope you all stay around for the next meeting, and I'll stick around too. Thanks for coming, and we'll talk to you later.
Yeah, Jay, the Braille note, I haven't had much of a chance to look at the PacMate, but you can do